30 years ago, you couldn't walk into your local supermarket and find baby spinach or extra virgin olive oil or jars of sun-dried tomatoes and mango salsa. It took a culinary revolution known as California cuisine to bring this about, which also brought with it endless individual pizzas with goat cheese and pesto, and arguably the rise of the celebrity chef. Jeremiah Tower was there at the creation, and he makes a case for that with his new memoir, California Dish. In it, Tower reminisces about his first job as a professional chef in the early 1970s at Alice Waters restaurant Chez Panisse in Berkeley, California. Tower eventually became a co-owner of Chez Panisse. In the 80s and 90s, he ran several other successful restaurants in the Bay Area, including Santa Fe Grill and Stars. He's the author of two cookbooks, Jeremiah Tower Cooks and Jeremiah Tower's New American Classics, which won a James Beard Award. I talked with him recently about the evolution of his approach to cooking. You describe in your book that you'd worked at Chez Panisse for a while and you were searching for your identity as a chef or the mark that you were going to make with this bistro food. And you had an epiphany at one point on a rare vacation in Mexico that you had to do big, outlandish, non-traditional things based on traditional impulses. So what did that mean to you and where did that lead you?
Well, I loved the old food, but I realized that, you know, we'd been doing regional, I mean, I had the idea to do regional festivals. So we started with the country food of the regions of France. And then when we ran out of regions and we were talking about Corsica and things like that, and I thought, that's really pushing it, you know, and I just realized that we were sitting in the middle of the most wonderful region of all called California. And we should just use those ingredients. There were the Monterey prawns that we'd drive down and get fresh. There was just the beginning of goat cheese. There were oysters from Tamales Bay, sometimes the live lobsters from the Mexican coast. And I just thought we should develop our own kind of cuisine using California ingredients, but using the principles from the past of all the great dishes of the past as well.
There's some great descriptions in the book about what lengths a chef has to go to get the freshest and the best ingredients. And you describe the Oakland Italian, an Italian butcher, and that you'd get shoulder deep into drums filled with the blood and liver of calves to buy your stuff. What were you looking for in those drums?
Well, you know, that was an amazing place because they were just receiving these calves that were going down, hanging up from the truck, whizzing down into the warehouse. I used to stand there with a pail and grab the veal sweetbreads as they went by, because within half an hour, you know, they were going to be in boxes and put in the freezer. So the only way for me to get fresh things was to stand there and grab them out of the carcasses as they went by. And with the livers, they came in a big barrel, and it was full of calf's blood. I mean, and I wanted the blonde ones, so I had to roll up my sleeves and dig in there to find them. Of course, the people who worked there thought I was absolutely crazy. Probably was.
You wanted the blonde livers because they're better? What? They taste better?
Yeah, the blonde livers of veal, they're milder, closer to foie gras, in a sense.
Now, it sounds as if two things were happening at once in the 70s in California. This idea that you should use the very freshest, locally grown, unique to California food, and also that you should, or that a restaurant offers more than food, it also offers entertainment.
And that we learned that entertainment was very important, more as well as the food. When we did for the champagne dinner, blue trout, and that's one of the three menus in the book in California Dish. And we brought these trout up from Garapata, where I had remembered they were since I was a child and my grandfather took me down there. So we brought up these live trout in tanks and had bathtubs and pails and everything all over the kitchen with compressors putting air into the water. And every time there was an order, I'd grab a trout and kill it and shove it into the corbillon. But the first trout slipped out of my hands, went flopping across the floor just as a waiter was coming into the kitchen. So it went out into the dining room and ended up on some dowager's ankles. I mean, there were shrieks all over the all over the restaurant, and that really made the evening. Everyone came piling into the kitchen to see what we were doing. then I knew that theater was at least half the story.
Now, you do write in the beginning of your book, though, that California cuisine would never have become discovered if it weren't for a few pushy French chefs. And this involves this involves a promotional event for Ocean Spray Cranberries in Newport, Rhode Island. So what's the story behind that claim?
Cranberries, yes, believe it or not. But it was an event that the agency for Ocean Spray was doing called Innovations. So they invited Guy Savoy, who was the young Turk in France at the time, to come to the United States and put on a dinner in front of 100 American food journalists to try and see, you know, what this so-called sauceless cuisine or sort of nouvelle cuisine as it was developing in France, what it was really like. Then they invited a couple of us California kids to come and do, you know, a funny little lunch to keep everybody's strength up. As we got to the mansion, we were in the kitchen and the French arrived and they said, you know, out, 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 you know, we're the important ones here and we need the kitchen. So I looked around for a place to cook, and the only place, remembering a sense of theater, of course, that we put up a kitchen of grills and tables right in front of it where the journalists were going to have lunch. And we cooked in front of them. And that's the first time they had ever seen grilling and salsas and things like that. It was certainly the first time we ever saw cooking dessert on the charcoal grill as well. And it just caught their imagination. And that was when the term sort of California cuisine and what it meant, meaning charcoal grilling and salsas and everything, was plastered across every food section in America.
So you do a lot of grilling in California cuisine, or you did back then, but you did it then because of necessity?
Yes. Well, of course, we did a lot of grilling afterwards because that's what the press said California cuisine was. You know, but you know, the only heat source we had out there were these 2 6-foot-long grills and mesquite charcoal. So we had to cook everything on there, and the dessert was actually a fruit ragout. And we just lined up all the sauté pans, put the fruit in with the sugar syrup and a pinch of salt, and just in unison tossed them around until it was warm because we were serving it with coconut ice cream. So that the sight of, you know, 6 of us, each with a sauté pan in our hand and tossing them all in sequence, it was just wonderful to watch. Great theater.
Now, another icon of California cuisine became the little individual pizza with goat cheese and tomatoes pesto or whatever. And it sounds as if it's also kind of a funny, born of necessity story to how you first started serving those.
But so many of the things in the restaurant business that become legendary or great or most successful are born out of necessity. I mean, you can sit around for hours or weeks even trying to come up with a brilliant idea. But in my experience, it's the brilliant idea that because you're under pressure and you need something in 5 minutes. And that's exactly what happened with the individual pizzas. It was the third birthday of Chez Panisse. And I had written this menu, and I'd seen in a book in the south of France these things called panisse. I thought, well, that's it. That's perfect, you know. But, of course, I didn't look to see what they were. I just quickly glanced over the recipe and saw they were little round things. And when I got closer to the event, I made them, and they were absolutely disgusting because they were made out of chickpea flour.
But they were already on your menu, your printed menu.
I know, so I had to do something. So I just told everybody, oh, you know, panisse, they're just little pizzas kind of things. And everyone was happy. So we made them.
Now, eventually, California cuisine got a backlash was created, and I'm thinking of a few quotes that you point out in your book from classically trained French chefs, from food critics. One of my favorites is from a French chef in 1998 who writes that, or he said that California cuisine consists of things you don't normally hear of going together, like alligator fritters with a parsnip sauce. The alligator tastes like chicken and the parsnip tastes like turnips. It's frightening.
Sounds frightening to me.
So how aware were you of the backlash? And had you already moved on to a new kind of cooking by the time this came around?
Well, of course, what the backlash against was California cuisine redux. I mean, it was the people who didn't really understand it, who thought it was all about chic ingredients rather than perfectly controlled, simple, wonderful ingredients. So when people started putting kiwi fruit on top of squab, and then on balsamic vinegar on the plate, and raspberries and lemongrass that they thought had to be chopped up rather than made into an infusion, I mean, it just got impossible. You couldn't even eat the food after a while. So we never went there. I never went there. And also, you know, so that I distanced myself a little bit from all of that. We called it New American Cuisine, or the Eastern Press called it New American Cuisine.
Now, I'm thinking that the ingredient revolution that was started by the California cuisine movement in the 70s and the 80s has really worked in this country. You can get boutique farm and baby vegetables and lettuces and organic wild rice and hothouse herbs and all of that pretty much everywhere. What's left for chefs to work with in terms of innovation? Or, you know, does that make it harder? Does that raise the bar?
It does raise the bar. I mean, at the end of California Dish, I say, you know, the revolution has worked, because you can go to Texas and see those amazing central markets, or you can be driving in Marathon, Florida, on the Keys, and see another amazing supermarket, and all the farmers markets all over Union Square in New York and Philadelphia, everywhere. The revolution has worked, and it's all about ingredients. But the challenge now is not to find the ingredients so much, though that's still a huge part of any great chef's work. I think the innovation now with a chef in America is to step back and let the food, let the ingredients really speak, rather than saying this is the food of a famous chef. I mean, look at the biggest influence now on chefs in America is Spain. And those wonderfully crazy chefs in Spain sometimes put just one little ingredient on a plate. Of course, it's amazingly perfect and full of flavor and intriguing at the same time. So that's the challenge. It's not so much doing something new, but it's doing something new for yourself, which is to step back, let the food be famous.
Well, Jeremiah Tower, I want to thank you so much for talking. It was fun.
Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Jeremiah Tower's new memoir is California Dish.